Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Dugout Debate Podcast. Apologies for the break since our last podcast. Life has accelerated somewhat for some of us since we were last on. There are dissertations being done, new jobs for some, and for others there have been furloughs and painstaking work commitments. I am Liverpool fan Chris Kerr, and joining me this evening are Tottenham fan Tim Husselbury, Arsenal fan Jack Simpson, and our North American correspondent, who is across the pond in Philadelphia, Man United fan Will Barrett. So why have I introduced everyone with their football or soccer club that they support? Well, that is because we're here to talk about the topic of football's European Super League this week. For those of you that have been living under a rock, this is the news that the Premier League's so-called Big Six of Liverpool, Tottenham, Man City, Arsenal, Chelsea and Man United have agreed to join a new European Super League alongside Real Madrid, Barcelona, Atletico Madrid from Spain and AC Milan, Inter Milan and Juventus of Italy. Those clubs have agreed to establish a new midweek competition while continuing to compete in their respective national leagues. It's said that the inaugural season was intended to commence as soon as possible and anticipated that a further three clubs would join the breakaway. The European Super League is also planned to launch a women's competition as soon as possible after the men's tournament starts. But before we get into the European Super League debate, I would like to bring the guys in to talk about another piece of big news this week. Certain Jose Mourinho leaving Tottenham. Tim, our resident Spurs fan, what are your thoughts?
Well, firstly, it's first manager of the European Super League sacked. You'll never see that. Thank you very much. I think I go for all of us Spurs fans when I say stay away. I have hated every second of the Mourinho era. Not every second. I quite like the first couple of days when I finally fooled myself into thinking Spurs were a big club. Q, Jack, just jumping on that particular grave. The sort of decline post or pre first lockdown, the slight resurgence and then decline post lockdown, the mini rise in December where we were top of the league for about a minute, then lost to Liverpool and the whole season fell apart, the bullying, the like criticising players, the Dele Alli shenanigans, Harry Winks just left out of teams. I just hate him. I hate him. He has always been the Antichrist.
Don't mince your words there, Tim.
I couldn't be happier. Like, when I saw it yesterday, I double took because I was fooled by something before where somebody had retweeted. I think from when Mourinho was sacked at United, somebody had retweeted that. I was like, oh God, it's happening. And it hadn't. But then a week later, I saw it and then Twitter exploded. And I literally celebrated. And I think that's kind of like indicative of how I felt towards the evil man, the evil Antichrist man. Anyway, for some more reasoned thoughts, please.
Well, Will, you saw this coming down the line, didn't you, in your crystal ball, having had him at Man United before?
Oh, goodness me. Well, I hate to be the one to tell you that, you know, I told you so, but we kind of told you so.
You weren't telling me, just to clarify. I never really thought this is the man for.
Well, somebody needs to tell Daniel Levy that this is so. I mean, I thank the Lord that people can look at this and see that it's not just Manchester United's problem. Manchester United have had a particularly bad reputation for ruining careers post Ferguson. So people not landing on their feet, people transfers not working out, and you know Jesse Lingard's recent resurgence at West Ham being a something to point to there, but I just thank God it's not all our problem. Mourinho is toxic. The way that he hangs players out to dry is something that I don't really think has ever been acceptable in football. No matter what you might want to say about the characters of players that we have these days, or whether the culture of sensitivity has increased. That's not really relevant here. Just absolutely laying into players and throwing them under a bus is not how you would want to go about managing a football club in any day and age. And I'm just, yeah, I'm very, very happy that it didn't work out for Tottenham. not only because it would have been a bitter
just,
pill.
Before you move on, I think like what you said there was really kind of poignant, and I've seen it a lot in the rhetoric that he, you know, Mourinho perhaps isn't built for the managing the modern player, all this kind of thing. I think football always had a reputation for like boys being boys kind of atmosphere, and just, you know, having 7 pints after a training session and that kind of thing. And this has always been unacceptable. And clearly Mourinho has been nothing but a bully throughout his career. You know, he can come across charismatic, but that doesn't stop you being a bully. Like, bullies have wives and girlfriends and all this kind of stuff. They can clearly, you know, make relationships, but he is evil.
Well, he's good on the camera.
Yeah. Hey, he looks good on the camera.
He's good on the camera.
Exactly.
He timed himself well when he moved into Spurs, and obviously the Amazon documentary came out.
Yeah.
I do think he came across quite well on that at times, just because he was in front of the camera.
Yeah.
I think you guys obviously know more than anything, but at the time of him moving to you, he was obviously being linked with the Arsenal job at the same, well, just previously before, and that was to replace Unai Emery. And thank Christ, obviously, we didn't take him on.
The irony being, of course, it's not actually worked out any better.
No,
but QU winning your right.
Completely. And Arsenal are having a horrendous season. Like, but I feel like we're building more building blocks for the future than you may have been in the last 12 months. I think that's fair to say.
100%.
Because you've gone from arguably your most successful manager in a long time in Pochettino.
He is. I know he didn't win anything, but
he made you play attractive football. He built a good team, and then you decided he wasn't doing enough. And it was like, well, you've just moved into a new stadium. Like, you've just lost quite a few players that were quite key to your team, and then you go, oh yeah, we're just going to go to Jose Mourinho, who has a history of not staying at a club longer than 3 years because of the fact that the players and the staff that work with him get fed up and the club just ends up falling apart. Like, so yeah.
Is it Spursy that he's the first manager to leave without, or first time he's left
the
club without a trophy since
Spurs.
He started his career, pretty much? Or is that
I don't think that's Spursy. I think that's a general I think that's well in keeping with the downturn in Mourinho's career.
With Spurs.
Just the downturn in terms of Mourinho's career, because yes, he won some silverware with United, but it wasn't the silverware that everybody expected from him. Yes, we won the Europa League, but we came second in the Premier League, which for some reason he decided to call his biggest achievement in world football. How much I believe that is circumspect, but I think it's I think this is the natural progression for Mourinho, to go from, you know, winning top tier trophies in Premier Leagues and Champions League to winning second tier trophies in Europa Leagues and FA Cups, and now to win nothing at Spurs. I think that's just sort of the natural regression of him, if that makes sense. I don't necessarily think that it's got anything to do with Spurs. Spurs have an incredibly talented squad. Spurs have holes, but it's not a squad that you would point to and think, okay, this squad reached the final of the Champions League,
yeah, exactly.
And now we're suddenly struggling to pull results together.
You can't see like serious holes in that team either. Like, you look at that starting 11 and Spurs, you've got arguably a top four starting 11 there. Like, it's not even a doubt. But they just obviously were not performing. And yeah, he clearly had his favourites in terms of who he wanted to play, and I think that was sort of a problem as well. And yeah, I'm just kind of hoping that no other big team in Europe now go near him, because I think his time has come, and I think his time had come from United before that, but you still gave him a chance, which was a shame.
An Italian club will come sweeping in from him at some point, or a middling Turkish club, or he will get jobs. He'll probably get the Portugal job at some point.
He'll
stick around like a bad smell, but frankly the biggest service we can do to the memory of him is to no longer talk about him.
Well, I also wonder, like, what's next for what's next for Daniel Levy? Because as you said, you saw this coming. Almost everybody else in world football saw this coming. Does this kind of make you question seriously Daniel Levy's leadership of the club? Do you have faith in whoever he appoints as the next manager? Or
so can I work out what is his actual role with Spurs, Daniel Levy?
Because Daniel Levy,
like, he is. I know. Yeah. Obviously, he's like your top person, but obviously, yeah, he's not the owner, is he? Like,
no. So the owner is Joe Lewis, but he
he's the spokesperson for him.
Well, he's the he's the chairman of the club.
Okay.
So he makes all the big decisions in lieu of Joe Lewis, because Joe Lewis doesn't get involved in anything like that.
Okay.
And I think there are two Daniel Levy's. There's Daniel Levy, the businessman, who's brilliant.
He's very good at it, yeah.
And has turned Tottenham from a very middle-of-the-road, you know, Ledley King and centre-mid kind of side into a team that was, you know, close to winning a Champions League, considered one of the best teams in the league for, like, 2 or 3 years. But then you also get the Daniel Levy who thinks he knows the football side of things. And I can't speak to the man, I can't speak to him personally or anything like that. And I think there's been a drive towards him not making football decisions. But I think as we're about to sort of cover, they're questionable at best, some of them.
Yeah, there was talk of you guys bringing in a director of football to try to take away from that from him.
I don't think Levy
would want that,
to see
him
that kind of control. Yeah. So the chief of the head of recruitment, I think Steve Hitchin, is as close as we're going to get to that.
And he doesn't have full autonomy on it.
Yeah, no, not at all. Like Ndombele, Lo Celso, really good signings. Yeah. Højbjerg, really good signing. But then, you know, there were some other more slightly checkered historical signings. But, you know, we need to move on, I think.
Agreed.
From Spurs. As much as I'd want to talk about Spurs, let's leave
we
that.
We shall go back to the decision makers in all of the clubs that have been part of this later on. So back onto the European Super League. Unsurprisingly, UEFA and the Premier League have come out and condemned the move straight away as the news broke on Sunday. Since then, it seems everyone has come out against it, including UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson and France's President Emmanuel Macron, who has also welcomed the French clubs refusing to join. Critics say that the move is being driven purely by money and would destroy the domestic leagues and is against the integrity of the sport. So, what is everyone's thoughts on this? We'll start with Will first and then move on to the other guys.
I'm very keen to hear Will's opinion based off solely off the Facebook thing that he put up yesterday. So I'd also like you to explain that. Sorry for jumping in, but I'd like you to explain that as well, because it's an interesting point.
Okay, well, let me be clear. I am against the European Super League in principle. However, this, I feel, is the natural end result of where football has been going for a very, very long time. When you start talking about football is no longer for the fans, football has never been about the fans realistically since the inception of the Premier League. The Premier League and most other top flights in European football are essentially a closed shop anyway. And the Champions League, the latest iteration of the European Cup, is a closed shop. Why now are you getting your knickers in a twist about ring fencing a competition when you are already essentially in a ring fenced competition? I'm talking about clubs like Leicester, like Burnley, like Newcastle United. So, for example, why are Newcastle United were crying out for the Sheikh of Saudi Arabia, Mohammed bin Salman, to take over their club? They were very happy to take his money, and yet suddenly now that other teams are making decisions purely based off of financial greed, do they have a serious problem with it? I think it's a big, big double standard, and if you want to take the moral high ground here, you really need to have a look at yourself and say, the way that we have acted as fan bases, as clubs, have perpetuated this. We are crying out for our clubs to spend £45-50 million on a player every single transfer window, where do you think that money realistically comes from? It's not coming from match day revenue. Most of it, by and large, is coming from TV rights deals.
For me, this all came originally from when sports go professional. Like, if a sport goes professional, a lot of the time they're trying to bring in the best athletes into the sport. And to bring the best athletes into the sport, obviously you need to have money. So to do that, you have someone that's happy to splash the cash on a club. And to use it as an example with rugby, Chris will know this quite a lot, but most of the clubs in the Premiership don't make a profit. They live off the ownership or the company that is like the flagship of that club. So, yeah, I do think that we've had this for a while where the clubs haven't been run by the fans. I think there's only a few examples that have fan bases that are leading the clubs. I think Dortmund is one of them. I don't know if Bayern Munich is another. Obviously, so it's quite heavy in Germany. And obviously, it's quite funny that these are two of the teams that haven't actually come out as saying they want to be in the Super League yet, if they're going to be. Because I know Bayern Munich actually came up with some statement earlier today, I think, but I haven't actually had the opportunity to read it.
That's sort of a separate political discussion, which I think we'll get to later.
Really. Yeah. To just reiterate, I think, Will, you are right. I think the sport and clubs have not been run by the fans, especially in this country, since the sport probably went professional. And like Arsenal was on the stock market only up until recently, where fans could buy into the club if they wanted to. Okay, it was very unrealistic because of how much they cost. But until Stan Kroenke, who is now Arsenal's owner, came in and bought everyone out, it's just a precedent that all the clubs are going that way, because obviously the fans now want to have this money to spend on players, and it's just going to go and get worse and worse and worse. So, yeah, I think you are right. I think the start of the Premier League is probably a line where it happened, but I think it's probably when it started going professional and people were able to throw in more and more money.
To sort of like, I think I sit somewhere along the lines of your argument, Will, but I'm not convinced that the fans and the public can be charged with the same brush as like as you call it, like money grabbing ownership, because I don't think it's unreasonable for fans to want progression, and through that you want, you know, good players in your team. They never necessarily asked the insane sums of money to be spent. They always just wanted, oh, let's try and improve here or there. Like the clamour for spending £45 million is more like a function of transfers as an entity, rather than let's go and spend 45 million quid. Because, you know, when the £1 million transfer was, or transfer mark was broken, people were thinking, oh, that might be the end, that would be as big as it ever got. Like, you can't put that at the fans' door. That's sort of in a cycle of things going up and up and up and up and up.
Well, no, I agree. I agree with that to some degree. But then you've got to look at that and saying, well, where does that end? And it ends with this, surely. It ends with the richest clubs at the top pulling the ladder up. It's time and time again it happens in, frankly, all areas of society. And we're looking at it from a purely football perspective, but that is the natural end goal. And I think you should have seen this coming, if that makes sense. And, you know, when you've got, you know, a disparity in operating budget between Manchester United and Burnley Football Club, and most of the TV rights revenue is going to, you know, through Burnley because they happen to play in the same league as Manchester United or Chelsea or Manchester City even. You've really got to be like, well, this is what we expected. This is kind of what we wanted, if that makes sense.
You've got to be careful with the line is admittedly incredibly blurred, but essentially what you're doing is you're conflating football with capitalism and how capitalism essentially ends. And there are, that, like, in this particular scenario, that there is essentially no difference. But as a, as like a, as a lower end user, as I am looking at my bank account, like, does that make me the problem, or is that that society and the way we're governed as the issue? And I think you get onto much bigger questions, re political powers and, you know, just class systems and all this kind of stuff that, you know, is way beyond my comprehension and the scope of this podcast. But I feel like attributing blame is not on the sort of recipients of this stuff.
Yeah, it shouldn't, like, I should stress that I'm not laying the buck squarely at the doors of the fans. I agree that a lot of blame, much of the blame, I should say, should lie with UEFA and FIFA. And now that they have seen that this buck that they are making is going to end for them, and they're suddenly throwing their toys out of the pram and being like, well, you can't now play international football if you play for these clubs, I think that's a little disingenuous of them, or hugely disingenuous of them as well. I also think that we can look at things like, you know, Abramovich's first introduction to the Premier League when he bought Chelsea and essentially changed the way that football clubs operated, and every single fan base looked at that and wanted that for their club without necessarily thinking too much in terms of, well, okay, if we get this, then where does this logically end? I think there does have to be a little bit of responsibility placed there as well, if we're being fair.
We've argued before about sustainability of in sport and finances and all of that, and how basically sport is set up for all of the clubs to spend everything that comes in, because that's the clamour that all of the fans are going for. But it's whether at this point we're now thinking that that's worth it. And I get your argument, Will, that your argument is that we've kind of all been a bit greedy because we've seen the success that Chelsea have had, we've seen what Man City are doing now and splashing all the money, and people like Tottenham, people like Liverpool have gone, oh wow, we need to do that too, I'm going to spend 75 million on Virgil van Dijk, when these clubs weren't doing it before, they were spending at slightly lesser levels before, and that's kind of perpetuated it. And also the other point I thought I'd raise is that obviously we all support teams that are involved in this, and the majority of people in this country no longer support their local side. Like, they now support one of this big six, and that's kind of what they've chosen to do, and that's how football's changed over the years. Now it seems that everyone supports a big club because that's what they want. They want to follow a club that's going to win trophies and are currently in the headlines for signing big players. You can dream, Tim. It's still there.
Carabao Cup. Come on, Ryan.
But people seem to choose their teams for those reasons these days, rather than, oh, I'm going down the football with my dad on Saturday, I'm going to go and watch my local team. I don't particularly mind whether they're going to go and win a trophy at the end of the season, but I'm going to have a great time with my mates or with my dad on the weekend. It seems that kind of in that way, football's lost its way a bit. If that's what people are wanting from it, it's completely changed.
I agree to an extent, but I think we all sort of kind of keep an eye out on local teams. Like, whilst we might not go, you know, I might buy the odd Woking shirt here or there, the odd Dulwich Hamlet, which is where I'm at now, nice pink shirt. They're a separate discussion entirely. How much of that change in how people become fans of particular clubs is because of the way we ingest sport at the moment? And B, you know, you hear this argument a lot, like, oh, the real fans go to the games and that kind of thing. When you're at White Hart Lane, and the old White Hart Lane, and 27,000 of the tickets go immediately to season ticket holders, 3,000 go to away fans, and then there's like 1,000 left for people who don't have them, and they just go to the people at the top of the waiting list for the season tickets. Essentially, you will never get the opportunity to go to the stadium if you're a young kid with a dad who's not a season ticket holder because he doesn't fancy spending £2,000. Like, you know, whenever I last checked, I was 40,000th on the list, so I will never ever get a season ticket. Even if I wanted it, I would probably wouldn't take it. But like, the reality is 40,000 people have to not take it up for me to get there, because that season ticket just goes to the kid. Like, the name doesn't change. It just goes to the kid. So people actively have to drop out and say, no, I don't want it anymore.
It's a generational thing.
So, yeah, exactly. So, like, the same people that say, oh, you're not from, you know, not from North London or whatever, and you didn't come back here in the glory days. It's like, I literally couldn't because the stadium was already full. that doesn't make my fandom any less than, like, you know, Joe in the stands or, you know, anyone in India who's as much of a hyper fan as me, and they've ingested it the same way. They have all the same emotional ties. But yeah, that was sort of a
point. You're bang on there. That it's as Will mentioned before. It's the modern TV and the way that we're consuming sport these days has meant that most people have their local team. They have a shirt that they have for their local side, and they might go and watch them occasionally. But then they have a Big Six team that they'll watch on Sky Sports every week, and that's their other side. So, like, they kind of do both these days. But because of the dawn of the Premier League and Sky Sports, and even social media is probably to blame for it as well, that we now, and no matter where you are in the world, you can support one of these Big Six clubs in the Premier League, or Barcelona or Real Madrid. As if you walk around the streets, you probably see it even in Philadelphia, Will. Like, you see Real Madrid shirts walking around the streets in England, which
all the time. I had a guy in my workplace wearing a Hala Madrid shirt, and I was just like, do you know what that means? You are very clearly American with your baseball caps on.
Well, exactly, yeah. Like, 50 years ago, my dad would have been like, yeah, you never see a Barcelona kit around Liverpool. It was all, like, Everton or... yeah, whatever. So,
but equally, what would they think about me wearing, like, a Texans hat at Asda?
No, they would probably look at me and think, "What are you doing?"
Yeah,
true. There's both ways of looking at it. So I totally get that argument, Will, that you're saying that we've kind of looked at football very differently these days, and because of our greed for success, it's kind of pushed us in that way. But I think the larger argument...
I think that really makes it sound like we're making active decisions to do this stuff. Like, the whole point of the Premier League is to force the Premier League down your throat and be, like, sensationalist. We talk about the big teams. So therefore, you naturally gravitate to the people that you have talking points with your mates. Because at the end of the day, the football isn't necessarily just about, well, I'd say 95% of it is this, right? It's the chatting with your mates about it. Ripping Jack for having a terrible team of choice. Like, that's what it is. It was always designed as, like, a means to get people together, just to have a bit of a relax, remove yourself from it. And even when you're spending 100 million on, you know, sorry, 200 million on Kylian Mbappe, it still does that.
I do agree with that in a large part. You know, it is a way of getting people together. However, speaking as a Manchester United fan, one of our greatest ever, probably the second greatest manager in our history, Sir Matt Busby, always pushed the mantra of, you know, you are playing for the people who work in the city of Manchester. They, you know, have working class jobs, and they want you to go out and entertain them on a Saturday and Sunday. And I do feel, because of globalism and commercialism, and while yes, that has in large parts been very good for a lot of people, it has moved slightly away from that, and there are far more talking points and far more controversies.
It's not just slightly though. For me, it's not just slightly. Like, we all wish that these were still clubs run by the fans, but, like, these are being run as businesses now.
They have been for a while. Let's not get around. Should we move on?
Yeah. So, from what we were, I was going to talk about this later, but I think it runs in nicely to what we're talking about here. It's the larger debate that this has made people kind of sit up, and whether this is a turning point now for us thinking, do we want to debate who is actually running our football clubs at this point? Do we want to change this? Because, for instance, Jurgen Klopp and some of the Liverpool players came out against the idea of the European Super League when asked about it against the match against Leeds. And it's clear, and Pep Guardiola's spoken against it today. Did no one think to ask the managers and the players before we got to this point? So it's clearly the owners and CEOs have gone away and decided this amongst themselves without even asking the players and managers, let alone fans. So I think that's another, the next debating point. Do we think that because this has been handled so poorly and the reaction it's got off the back of it, do we start thinking about the way we manage our teams? Do the fans need more of a say in it? Do the managers and the players need more of a say in it? Or is it just still down to the chairman like Daniel Levy, as we mentioned previously?
Well, I'm guessing you've also seen today that Jordan Henderson has called a meeting with all the captains in the Premier League to sort of have a chat with it on Wednesday. Today's Tuesday. So by the time this actually comes out, it's probably all changed. But anyway, we're on the button here at Dugout Debate. The players are the commodity, right? Without them, the posturing of these men with shiny suits, or not shiny suits, I'm imagining they have them dry cleaned, with suits with lots of fat wads of cash in their pocket, like these delusions of grandeur and thinking that they are like the governors of the universe, when in reality they own an entity where people go and kick balls for a living.
Yeah, the players have the power.
They have convinced themselves that they're the ones in charge. The players don't have to play if they don't want to. Like in this, they can take the severance package or whatever that results at the end of this from not playing in this competition because they don't want to. It goes beyond the point of sport for them. Like I, for instance, can't imagine Harry Kane, the man driven by records and all this kind of stuff, not playing in the Premier League, not playing for England, because Daniel Levy's gone, yeah, I could take 350 million big ones right now.
I agree. The time to have a serious critical conversation about who is running the football clubs should have happened last week. It should have happened ages ago. Since
I love how for a long period of time you've gone last week.
last week to be facetious. Since Man City have been bought by a human rights suppressing regime, since PSG had been bought by a human rights suppressing regime, we have needed to seriously think about where this money comes from, what the asking price is for all of this fabulous redevelopment of stadiums, of training pitches, of investments in our clubs, where that comes from, what is the price for your silence, essentially. And I do feel that far too many fans have been far too quiet for too long, if that makes sense.
Maybe this is the moment, though, that now that it's come to their attention, that this is the time for them to act. So I wanted to briefly bring up the Bundesliga model that's been talked about previously. So obviously no clubs from Germany's top flight, the big ones being Dortmund and Bayern Munich, have agreed to join the European Super League, despite everything that would have been in their favour. And this is because most clubs in Germany are under what they call the 50+1 rule, which says commercial investors cannot have more than a 49% stake and that fans must have a majority on voting rights on any issues. So should we be looking to have that kind of thing for our clubs over here?
Yes.
So there's a couple of points to make here, I think, specifically relating to Bayern Munich first. They would be all in if the 50+1 rule didn't exist. Like their chairman has frequently demonstrated that the value of competition is worth nothing. Like tapping up players, the best players from other sides, sort of upwards of 2 to 3 years before their contracts run out. Here's 300k a week. You just leave that contract and that's what we're going to pay you in 2 years' time when you join us, right? Lewandowski, Upamecano, like all these kind of players, they move to Bayern, right? So the fact that Bayern are being portrayed as this sort of holier-than-thou entity, for essentially the chairman had no choice but to say no, because if he said yes, he would have been hounded out. Like that's the beauty of the system.
Why would you want to look at Bayern Munich? Who, how many Bundesliga titles have they won in a row now? Because they buy up all the domestic competition. Why would you want to look at the way that Bayern Munich is run and say, okay, we want that in the Premier League? Because all that essentially means is that there's going to be a monopoly like there has been in Serie A with Juventus, like there is with Bayern, like there is in Ligue 1.
France, yeah.
And, you know, part of what makes this Premier League special, although in reality not that special, because the only teams who have won the Premier League outside the Big Six are Blackburn and Leicester City, and both of those are essentially miracles, is that competition, if that makes sense. So you're just going to end up with one club sitting at the top of the English Premier League. So I don't necessarily think we should look at Bayern as this kind of this.
Not just Bayern, it's more the German overall system. So we're looking at fans getting a voice. Yes, obviously at Bayern it still led to this domination that we're talking about, and they've still splashed the cash as they've had to carry on being this dominant force. But it's that they managed to stop them joining the European Super League by having this in place. So do we want something similar to get more of a voice for fans in there?
There definitely needs to be a self for fail-safe. 100%, yeah. There definitely needs to be a fail-safe.
The thing is, like, this horse has not only bolted, it's had kids died, and the kids have died. Like, it's we're way too far down the line.
I've not heard that analogy before, Tim.
Thanks. I've just come up with it, and frankly, it's brilliant.
This is like Red Rum winning the Grand National in 1979. Yeah, exactly. This is so just, far removed.
Just give me the Nobel for Literature and we'll move on. but the mechanism that we get fan ownership, or like fans having a say in a real tangible manner, is government intervention.
Yeah.
And what has this government consistently demonstrated that it does? Is it tackle big businesses head on and make sure they don't get monopolies? Or is it just quiet handshakes under the table, business as usual, please feel free to keep the money that we should be taxing you? I'm not gonna come down on either side of the fence, but recent cronyism, or frankly flagrant corruption aside, we all know the answer. So like that model won't happen, right? So we can forget about it. So what do we do, right?
Yeah. That was going to be one of my questions. It was going to be, what can we do to stop it? And do you think UEFA and the other 14 Premier League clubs that have rejected the proposal will be able to bring them back into line?
But do you want them back in line? That's the next question. Do we actually want them? Like, go off and play your stupid game that nobody's going to watch because it doesn't matter. And we'll just happily carry on.
Are they going to get a TV deal is the big question.
Yeah.
They're not going to do it if they don't get a TV deal.
They are going to get a TV deal. Like, nobody would part... Like, as much as we all feel like this is a criminally bad decision and shouldn't happen, they are going to get a TV deal because, you know, I might stop watching Manchester United because of this, but, you know, Manchester United's fan base is over 1 billion people. Not everybody is going to stop watching Manchester United or Manchester City just because they don't agree. If that were to happen, then that's absolutely brilliant, and I would fully support that decision. But I don't think that is going to happen, unfortunately.
So it's less likely to be through the TV deal then, and it's more likely to be through, as we've already mentioned, stopping people like Harry Kane playing for England, or getting them to come back and play in the Premier League if they're wanting to play this competition in midweek, saying actually you can't enter the Premier League if you're part of this competition.
If the TV deal is something that you're going to sort of cling to as a reason why it will happen, I think that it's also the same reason why it's going to fail, because what is the point? It all brings it down to, like, what is the bloody point of anything to do with this whole charade where essentially Spurs and Arsenal get beaten up every week, Atletico come 10th, and then one of Bayern, Man City, PSG, and maybe Man United win it every so often, or, you know, Real Madrid. It doesn't really matter. Like, what is the point in this closed shop of horror where you're locked in, essentially repeatedly punching the guy in red and white and white and blue?
You're right, actually. A lot of people haven't thought about that. A lot of people haven't thought that all of these clubs are ridiculously successful in their own leagues, but there can only be one winner of the European Super League, and there's going to be another 11 disappointed clubs at the end of it. So if anything, it might tarnish their reputations. that they're now mid-table teams of this new league rather than top teams.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it would be quite familiar to Manchester United of late to be a mid-table team.
You're not the only one.
And that's, I think that's the other preposterous thing about it, is that, you know, if we're going to get into the question of who really deserves to be in this league,
we don't need to get into this part, Will, because I think Tim and I will happily say that we don't really know why we're there. If you're wanting to look at the top teams, if we're looking at
no,
this
I've already said why we were there. We're going to be the punching bags. Like, that's the point. We're the punching bags that will happily sign up because we don't want to miss out. Like, that is the FOMO that we
don't want to miss
there
out.
For.
Indeed, yeah.
And I've seen a lot of comparisons between the NFL and all this kind of stuff, which is fine and fairly valid. But the whole point of the NFL is it has the great leveler that is the draft. And yes, you have the super rich teams who can manage this kind of stuff. And frankly, if there was a European soccer league which had a draft system in place, I would probably be relatively keen for that.
For that to survive and that to prosper, it needs the entire college system underneath. All of the things I've read have gone, oh yeah, it works really well in America. It has the whole college system as its pyramid underneath to make it amazing.
And also the college system in America is a closed shop anyway. Like,
yeah.
Alabama, LSU, Clemson and Ohio win every single year. It's like, there's just a pyramid under this great like leveler that is that is the NFL. But if you want to be in the NFL, you have to perform well for Alabama and win the CFB every year.
Okay, so here's a potential solution, right? You say to them, okay, go and have your fun in your league, all right? But these players, you only get them for, you know, an ESL season, which, like American football, is incredibly short. And the rest of football is going to play on. And what you do, you don't have Manchester United. You have the United Reds and the City Blues and the London Whites and the South London Reds and all this kind of stuff, right? And then you can draft players from any league with a budget, right? Like you do on Football Manager or anything like that. You can have them for the 8-week season or the 10-week season or the 10-game season, however long it is, or else you can just do one, right? That would be fun, and we'd all watch it. It's better than the Confed Cup. It's better than, you know, some of the terrible Euros that we've had. But anyway, like, it doesn't work. Like, this doesn't work.
Yeah,
these are meant to be clever men, right? But instead, they're just not.
So another one of my questions was going to be, obviously, UEFA had hoped and had tried to launch plans for the new 36-team Champions League, basically on the Monday after this came out on Sunday, to try and head off the formation of the Super League, but it was too late. So basically my next question was going to be, if you're UEFA right now, what reforms would you make, if any, to the Champions League to try and appease the people that want to leave? Or would you just go hardball and say, we're keeping it exactly as it is, like it or leave it?
But how do you appease these guys now? Because at this point, that all they're after is money, because they want to play the top teams like all the time.
I was mentioning it to Will actually just before we got onto the call. I think they were looking for the clubs getting 6 Champions League places in the Premier League, or basically guaranteeing their place in the Champions League. If they don't get the European Super League, that's what they're going to come and back down to. That's, if they don't get the European Super League, which is obviously their ultimate aim, they want some sort of comeuppance for it, whether it be 6 Champions League places or even 8 if they can't qualify from 6.
I guess one of the things that you would look at is, because even when we look at the group stages now of the Champions League at the moment, some of the better teams in Europe aren't qualifying for the Champions League because they're still trying to have countries from poorer teams, like even, I don't know, the Croatian league are probably still going to lose more 9 out of 10 times to teams in England or France. I know they didn't exactly happen this year for you, Timmy, but like, you'd still think there's a leveler there. But you've got to realise that the Champions League is obviously a European competition. They want to have it open to as many countries as possible so that they're having as many people watching it. So it's a really difficult one to implement.
The difficulty is as well is that if you increase the level the number of teams who are allowed in the Champions League per league, say to 5 to 6, we're always hearing about how many games these professional football players play every year, and it's too much at the moment. And how many games would you potentially be adding on to an end onto a season?
A
10, maybe more.
A billion. But the big issue with this new model, this is also rubbish. Like the fact that this was ever going through is also rubbish. Is that it's infinitely scalable. Now, once you do this, you can play it forever. Like the Champions League was always okay because it was limited by the fact you can't really go to a round of 64 and still have meaningful group stages. This is just like obscene. This is worse. Like, this is so much worse than anything. So you might say I'm deluded. We've talked about delusions of grandeur already. You might say that I'm deluded, right? If I'm UEFA, if I'm at the top there, I'm like, right, this is a perfect opportunity just to really relook at European football as a whole. Because what do we actually want from European football, right? So you want to see, like,
you want the good top teams,
high quality games between the best teams at the moment, right? It's not between, you know, dead Juventus after they've not qualified for the Champions League this season or anything like that. So, you know, as much as the Europa League brings money to places, can it? The Conference League, don't even start it, because Spurs will be playing that next season and I sure as hell won't be bothering watching that. Get rid of these competitions that effectively serve as a feeder for the main European competition. Reduce the number of games. Like, nobody had any complaints, really, fans-wise, anyone else. We didn't have a complaint with how the Champions League is structured.
Yeah.
Yes, the best teams tend to get through, but you don't get seasons like Ajax and Spurs making it to the semi-final without the format that it had, the knockout, the jeopardy, all that kind of stuff, right? Make the Champions League the European League competition, the only thing there is, and you qualify. Okay, qualifying, you know, I haven't got enough time to go through the various permutations of that now, but we can't be closing the door to, you know, the Croatian teams, because look at what happens. You boot Mourinho out of a European competition and it's bloody hilarious, isn't it? There's too much football, right? I have got fatigue from it. I couldn't wait for it to come back after lockdown. I was all over the Bundesliga when that came back. There's way too much football. Like, finding myself in Mercato's watching Spurs beat some, I don't even know who it was, in the middle of July, like in the Europa League qualifier. Like, what am I doing? What is this?
I think that is one of the big issues, and I kind of, one of the reasons they've put forward, I think Florentino Perez said it before, that he wants to save football because he wants to bring back the enjoyment of these big games. But you can get those big games in the Champions League. We don't want those every week. They're special,
exactly,
because they happen in ties in the Champions League when they're drawn out of a pot. We want that randomness, not that they're going to be in a league structure altogether.
Mm.
Where it gets a bit boring when it's the same teams in the Champions League each
very
time.
Boring.
When it was Tottenham and Ajax going on those runs, that makes it way more interesting than, oh yeah, Barcelona are in it again, oh yeah, Bayern Munich are in it again. It's just the same teams otherwise.
Yeah, you want to see your teams playing different teams as well. I know it's exciting seeing, oh okay, we're playing Bayern Munich, but I think it was 3 out of the last 4 years, or 4 out of the 5 years, that Arsenal are in the Champions League. We got Barcelona and Bayern Munich every knockout round. It's like, okay.
It's Olympiacos now, isn't it, mate?
It is Olympiacos now, yeah. I completely agree. Like, you do, okay, you may not want to watch every game that you play in the Champions League if it's going to be against Dynamo Kiev or Dynamo Zagreb, but like, it gives it that specialty when you do get to that big game. And I think we do all wait for that, and we all, like, we want to, we get excited about that more because it's less often, which I think people really forget.
Something you could do, I think this might be quite fun, is that you take, I don't know, it's sort of an amalgamated FA Cup Champions League format where the top X teams from every division, I don't know, 2, 3, whatever you want to do, you all get put into one ginormous tie at the beginning, and it's knockout, draw, until you reach a group stage, have a group stage, then go back into the knockout format. How fun would that be? You were just, like, I guarantee you Spurs would be knocked out in the first round.
Yeah, I didn't know
that. That sounds like the Europa League qualifying stages that start in July.
It does, but, like, it's, like, you can get really big teams knocked out very early. Because I guarantee you, by the time you hit the group stage, two or three of them will be missing because they've screwed it up at some point.
Yeah, I think Pep would get bored and play Edison as centre forward
against Shamrock Rovers,
And then get knocked out before the preliminary group stage.
Edison at centre forward, and you're losing his passing range. What kind of madman are you? You put him in centre mid, at best attacking mid, but I'm thinking deep lying playmaker kind of thing. Clearly, you've not played on Football Manager with Edison in the midfield. Yeah, that's my solution. So, Seferin, if you want to ring me up, we can thrash out a deal. I reckon somewhere in the £1 billion mark for my intellectual property, and we'll be Ruby.
Anyone else got any ways of solving it?
I don't know. I think the other thing that you could do is make it more exclusive. Instead of having a top four, you have the top two teams. Which I think that would appease people who are saying we've got too much football. Yes, it would be a little bit more of an elite, and it would also be a little bit more of an elite competition, which these big clubs want by European Super League, so that they're playing, you know, they are playing Bayern Munich and they are playing PSG and they are playing Juventus and AC Milan. You know, the ramifications of that is top two football becomes the be-all and the end-all of the entire... finishing the top two becomes a be-all and end-all. So, obviously not a particularly elegant solution, but at least it does.
So, we still have that in the Championship, effectively, don't we? Like, top two is what you want. So, and then you have the rat race for the playoffs. Maybe a playoff in leagues would be fun and would negate the need for the FA Cup type shenanigans that I said. But, you know, I'm just an ideas man. I'm not for practicalities.
We've also got to be careful of how much we do change about it, because I know Perez came out and said something about how the young aren't actually interested in watching football anymore because they're all on their video games and the football games are too long. But, like, we all fell in love with this sport that we watch. Like, we've just got to be careful. I know we're not talking about changing the sport, but we don't want to throw in a new tournament or completely change and avert it, because we do seemingly like this sport and this tournament as well.
Yeah, I do agree with that. From what we've said in our proposals, it's pretty difficult to tie up there.
Yeah.
The clubs want the finances and the guaranteed money of getting in it every year, and we want different teams, and we want it to be exciting as fans, to different to the teams that are going to be there every year. So it's quite difficult to marry the two
up. UEFA doesn't really care about the clubs being happy, do they?
No.
So we should just pretend to be UEFA and just kick... like. Go away. Like, if you're not happy with the competition, feel free to make your own league and go away. Yeah. This is how we're reformatting it for us.
I don't think that they would do that. I think this is just... No,
it's the right decision.
Yeah, it's the right decision.
I'm not interested in what Spurs have to do about, you know, dropping back into the Champions League.
Yeah, and I think this is where we're getting the fans from, because I mean, the clubs are thinking that they've got more power than UEFA, and they're happy to say, okay, well, we're going to go and form this Super League. And I just, as an Arsenal fan, I think that's absolutely pathetic. Like, one club should not be bigger. Sorry, even 15 clubs should not be bigger than UEFA if that's going to be the case and you want to do that. The fact that this is all money grabbing, and it is all money grabbing, that they're saying COVID has caused them to lose X, Y, and Z amount of money. Yeah, okay. Talk about the leagues that are in Division 2, how much money, what percentage of their revenue they've disappeared, and the fact that they're probably not even going to exist if other things happen. Like, they're saying that this new league is going to give them £240 million a season just to be in it, but they get £40 million for winning the Champions League. I'm sorry. I think there's advertently too many problems with the sport at the moment, and it's all money grabbing. It's just sad.
Yeah. The absolute cheek of these people, who, like, this has not been, you know, something that's been devised in the last 2 months, right? Since pre-COVID, they've had their eye on this, okay?
Yeah.
The cheek of someone like Levy or Kroenke to put all their staff on furlough, make people redundant, knowing full well that they're going to be expecting a windfall of insert however much they're expecting at the time. Absolutely diabolical. Like, these people, you know, I'm not looking at them for, like, moral guidance or anything like that.
I hope not.
But, you know, you'd like to think that they have a little bit of a respect for human life is going a bit extreme. But yeah, let's go for it. Human life, and clearly they just don't. But anyway.
Yeah, that is why everyone has got so upset with it. And obviously football's been like that for a little while. And it's, as we've mentioned at the start, going to be difficult to reverse it back from the constant nuclear missile race where everyone's just trying to get the next amazing player for X, Y, and Z amount of money. But... yeah, it's gonna take a lot of changing, and we've got plenty of ideas.
Yeah, hit us up. It's fine.
it will be very interesting, and I think it's quite interesting even that this has come out in the first place, because football's been the same way it has been for so long. Mm. It's quite interesting that there's even a debate about changing the status quo of things.
Okay, what do you actually think is going to happen? Let's put our necks on the line. Chris, what do you think is going to end up happening?
So I think what's going to happen is that they're going to back down to UEFA on the terms that they get more entrants into the Champions League, or they at least get more prize money as a divided between those 12 clubs.
So the way you're putting that is you think UEFA are... the 12...
Yeah.
..are in a very strong position.
Yes.
I think they're really... not up the duffer. That's wrong. I think it's way less likely than it was yesterday in my mind that this is all going to go through. I think this unity of condemnation, like from across the board, I've not seen anyone other than random Twitter bots with exactly the same phrase and then inserting only Spurs and Arsenal fans will be upset by this, or only Liverpool and Man United fans will be upset by this. Literally the same sentences. Like, I just don't think there's the appetite from anyone or enough people that they're going to be able to force this through with any verve. Like, I think they anticipated less of a backlash. Like, they must have anticipated that people were going to be pissed off by this, but I don't think to that extent. And the key is the players. And the players, I'm not buying that an entire team is going to want to do it. A couple might.
No, I agree.
They're going to get the pay packet. But I think the majority of them are just like, this isn't for me. This isn't the point. Like, they're all kids who have basically grown up with nothing but impeccable drive and determination to succeed at all costs. I think if you take away the point of it, which is like part of the success is the risk of failure, which is why they're so good. If you take away the failure, then all they're doing is, you know, knocking it about for X number of minutes and passing it sideways, and there is no point. There just is no point. And I just don't think there's the appetite. So I think UEFA and the status quo actually have a lot more power, which then subsequently means I think that's kind of it for those 12 clubs in terms of returning back with any kind of say in anything moving forward. You've had your say and you've made it and it was terrible. You have to come back grovelling, and we're not conceding.
Oh, I agree.
We're not conceding to you. They don't need to. I just don't think that's how this is going
to
play out.
So you think we'll go to a normal Champions League next season, and these 12 teams will just...
Okay, so maybe they'll sort of move back on the Swiss model, but I think UEFA will essentially punish them in some way.
Yeah.
Whatever that manifests itself as, whether that's a re-change in format or they get kicked out for 5 seasons or whatever. But I don't think this is going to move forward. I think this is going to be nothing but backlash.
But you've got to remember that if they do kick these guys out, this is them damaging their own image as well, because obviously kicking these teams out,
yeah,
it will hurt them. Agreed. And they've got to look at it from that perspective as well. I do agree with you, Tim. I do think that they do need to do something to say, look, you can't just try to pressure your way into getting what you want just because it's not going your way at the moment.
Agreed.
But I keep saying it is a business for them. They've got to sell it, and for them to sell it, they need the big teams in there.
But also, I think the damage on that front has already happened, right? The key stakeholders have basically gone, we don't think your competition is good enough for our high class players. So that, like, effectively UEFA can just go, right, well, in that case they're gone. Okay, we'll just make another competition. Or we'll carry on with the same competition that everyone wants to be in. West Ham are going to be in it, you know. But anyway, but you know, you get the point.
Yeah, no, completely. Do we actually think that the owners and the people that are ahead of these clubs genuinely thought that they were going to be able to implement something like this? Because I don't even think that they did. I think they have done this solely to put as much pressure as possible on UEFA.
Yeah.
I genuinely think that they didn't even think they'd get this.
I agree with you, Simo, in that I thought that they went as far as they possibly could so that they could get something underneath it rather than getting their end goal. So I think they are trying to put pressure on UEFA to give them more prize money, to give them more places, rather than we'll threaten that we'll go and form this other league, and that will make
I'm not
them...
as convinced.
No, you don't reckon so?
No, I don't think so. I think this goes beyond that. I think there's too many people who see themselves as the key drivers of this, who genuinely believe that it's the way forward. I'm talking Agnelli and I'm talking Perez predominantly.
Yeah. Like that arrogant.
Like they have gone and severed every tie they had in European football and the key stakeholders there and like the key decision makers, and they've just gone, nah, we're doing our own thing. And they've said as much in statements. You don't like send a thing to your boss saying I'm going to make a new company, and I'm off, without it being serious, right? Because you're not getting back in once you've done that. Realistically, you can't expect it. So unless what you perceive as moving forward is a guarantee of something better, you don't do it.
Do you think all 12 that have signed up had the same thought about it, or some have just jumped on the bandwagon?
I think there's been lobbying behind the scenes, and I think that the teams who weren't convinced ended up being convinced by the clubs, and I'm sure in the next day we're going to find out that sort of somebody's having the wobblies and sort of tries to pull
I even saw it on Twitter today. One of the Premier League, it said one of the Premier League clubs is already thinking twice about joining it. So
yeah,
God, I hope it's Arsenal. Seriously. But no, because I think one of the things that I read on earlier was the fact that, because they keep on bringing up this, that they've been affected by COVID and everything, that Real Madrid are one of the linchpins of this, because they have been hurt so much and they want this financial backing and financial package that could help them. And we know what their Barcelona and Madrid are like and how they're run by very interesting characters, let's just say. I think they're the people that have kind of pushed the boat out and just put pressure on the other teams, and it is a shame. I do hope, as you said, Chris, that one of these Premier League teams does the bed a bit. Apologies for swearing, but like does try to step away from this ideology that it's just not right and it is going to damage the sport.
Yeah, I think you're right, Simmer. It definitely would have been Barcelona and Real Madrid, because they've been struggling financially for quite a amount of time, and obviously they've got the weaker league in La Liga.
Yeah.
So it makes more sense for them to try and join up with the rest of these other teams. The more surprising bit is that these Premier League teams have then agreed to be part of it, when we've got such a strong Premier League anyway. They probably thought that they could get the best of both worlds, as it said in the statement, we can play in the Premier League on the weekend, then we can play in midweek in this kind of competition. That was never going to fly with the other 14 Premier League clubs.
I think I don't want to add too much, because I know that we've already discussed this at length, is that I think the quickest and simplest way to stop this nightmare is for the coaches and the players to refuse, because nobody is going to turn up to watch Manchester United play with, you know, Hannibal Medjugorje starting in centre mid and Shola Shortire on the right wing. Love them as I do and think that they are wonderful prospects. That's not why you pay the big bucks.
I'd have Stan Kroenke playing up front for Arsenal at the moment, so happy to see that happening. Can't be much worse.
The prime, like, European youth competition, being the European Super League, sounds like something I could get on board with. You know?
Yeah.
Sending Medjugorje, sending, you know, Alfie Devine and Dane Scarlett and, you know, whatever new fresh thing. It's Harvey Elliott, isn't it? Yeah, Harvey Elliott.
Yeah, Harvey Elliott.
Like, sending them all to play in the European Super League, whilst Agnelli cries into his big Juventus flag, and oh, it's so beautiful, isn't it? You're completely right, Will. This is the crux of the whole thing. I just don't think there's the appetite from the players, and without that, it's pointless.
When you grow up your whole life thinking about winning a World Cup, or thinking about winning the Champions League, or, you know, dreaming of leading your favourite football team to a
European
Premier League
Super
title,
League glory.
Or, you know, talking about Harry Kane and getting that Premier League goal scoring record, you're not going to go and, you know, sign up to a new competition where all those records have yet to be written. you know.
But the weirdest bit, sorry to interrupt you, Will, they then said that they transfer the records of them in the Champions League over to the European Super League. So Real Madrid would start with 13 European Super League titles. And I was like, hold on a second.
Hang on a second. Are you seriously going to try and transpose Alfredo Di Stefano's record from like 60 years ago?
One of the other things that I read was that if they did decide to do that and there are 14 teams to revoke to kick out the six Premier League teams, wouldn't it mean Liverpool actually don't have a Premier League title?
Of course they'd say that.
Luckily Spurs didn't have one anyway, so they were thinking galaxy brain several years ago, weren't they? Like, let's not win it. Yeah.
but it would mean that Man City is still essentially starting from zero. Which is something that makes me happy.
Yeah, well, I thought we were going to mention that a lot earlier. I thought that was going to be one of the key talking points before. Why the hell are Man City even in this when 10 years ago they were a mid-table Premier League team? But there we go. That kind of proves the whole stupidity of it.
Making that argument, Aston Villa.
Well, exactly. Nottingham Forest, get them in there.
Preston North End.
We're talking about the big boys here.
Yeah, we're talking about people
with Blackburn Rovers.
Yeah, quite. I'm very much looking forward to like the FC Tottenham of Hotspur kind of Phoenix club rising out of the ashes of like very non-league football, and then Harry Kane in 2050 when he's, you know, how that would make him in his 70s, I guess, wouldn't it? Like finally rising from the ashes to get his 450th Premier League goal
without winning a tournament.
Yeah. Oh, no. By then, he'll have had several ankle surgeries and will have moved on to bionic.
Robotic, yeah. I was going to say.
But not robotic, because the robotic nature of it makes it sound like it's not under his control. The bionic, that means it's still under his control. VAR will have gone, or will be so good, because we've just decided to naff off offside. So Harry has literally just stood on the goal line with his bionic feet, just leaping like a salmon for every half chance.
So he's never leaving Spurs then, is he, Timmy?
Nah, he's never leaving Spurs.
I thought we were going to get through the whole podcast without mentioning VAR, and I was like, "That what a win that is. We've all forgotten about VAR for a second, and we can all be annoyed at something else in football, but no, we have to remember VAR again.
Good stuff. Should we leave it there then?
Yeah, that's it for this week. A big thank you to Tim, Jack and Will for joining me today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Cheers, man.
Thank you very much everyone for listening. Don't forget to follow us on social media at @dugout_debate and subscribe to our podcast on all the usual podcast providers, and hopefully see you all again very soon.